From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today's show is all about winter. We'll tell you how to stay safe outdoors and be prepared for emergencies. We'll share some best practices on how to keep your pets healthy and comfortable in the winter.
Just like people, pets' cold tolerance varies, and that can depend on their age, their coat, their body fat, activity level.
Plus, we'll share some tips to help avoid putting extra stress on your car in the cold.
If it's 1 or 2 pounds, it's not probably that big a deal. But what you want to do is, of course, check it with your tire gauge to make sure that even though it says it's down 1, maybe it's down 5. And then it becomes a problem.
All that's coming up on Lake Effect. But first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. We're well into winter, which can conjure images of big coats, warm drinks, and hunkering down until spring. Unfortunately, we can't always be insulated from winter weather-related emergencies, as power outages, car breakdowns, or icy conditions can throw a wrench into even the best-laid plans. Katie Rusnelos is the Public Information Officer with Wisconsin Emergency Management. She joins Lake Effect's Sam Woods to share how to prepare for winter emergencies, from unstable ice to carbon monoxide poisoning.
Can we start by running through a checklist of items to have on hand as cold weather approaches?
So as cold weather comes in, it's important to know what those conditions are going to be. When you have cold weather, that can be anything from winter storms that would come through with snow. That could just be extreme cold temperatures coming in. But some important things to have is to make sure that you have emergency supplies for your home and your car. These are things for your home, such as having flashlights and batteries, having emergency contact information on hand. And then for your car, important things to think about for those cold weather months are having extra blankets, extra hats and gloves in your car in case for some reason you would get stranded in those weather conditions, and having water and non-perishable food with you, like granola bars. Those are things you can just bring with you as you leave your home or work. You don't have to have those stored in your car because water freezes and it wouldn't be good to need water. And then you have a bottle of ice on hand. And then other things when cold weather approaches is to check your smoke and carbon monoxide detectors. During the winter months, you're going to be using your furnace or any other heating devices in your home. And it's important to have those safety measures on hand in case something happens.
Okay, so we got extra blankets and snacks for the car, and then checking smoke and carbon monoxide alarms. Are there any misconceptions that about winter safety that you run into in your work that you'd like to just dispel right now?
Yeah, I mean, some of these things I've heard from older relatives, or just some people in general thinking these common cold weather myths. So one of them you might have heard is you're going to lose the most body heat through your head. And while wearing a hat is good to keep your body heated, you can also lose heat from your hands or anywhere else where that body heat can escape. So it's important to have those layers. Another cold weather myth you might hear is animals with fur don't get cold. That is completely false. The general thinking is if it's too cold for you, it's too cold for your pets. So you need to make sure that there's adequate shelter with a heat source and food. And that also goes for farm animals as well. You want to make sure that they have adequate shelter and food and water available to them as well. Another cold weather myth you might have heard is drinking alcohol will keep you warm. And while you might feel a little bit warmer after you have a glass of wine or some beer, that's the blood rushing to your skin surface, but it also decreases that shivering process, which is helpful for your body to produce heat. Another thing is that alcohol can impair judgment, which can create dangerous situations.
Well, I will say that I am definitely guilty of spreading that rumor, and I will not do that anymore. So speaking of cold and shivering, how do I know when I'm just very cold versus so cold that I need to get inside ASAP?
That's a good question. When your body is shivering, if you're doing it for more than 10 or 15 minutes, that's a concern because your body is losing heat rapidly and you're getting close to those hypothermia conditions. And which hypothermia is when your body has an abnormally low body temperature. So your body temperature is normally 98.6 degrees. So when it's really far below that, that is a huge concern. It's most likely to happen at those very cold temperatures, but it also can occur when temperatures are above 40 degrees. When a person becomes cold from whether that's rain, snow, sweat, or falling into cold water. So some of those signs that you need to look out for with hypothermia for adults and children, you're looking for excessive shivering, exhaustion, confusion, your hands are fumbling, your memory is not there, you're slurring your speech and drowsiness. For infants, you're looking at that bright red or cold skin and very low energy. So some of the things that you can do to help prevent that is simply monitoring rooms where infants might be sleeping for that type of hypothermia. And when spending time outdoors, you should be dressing in warm and dry layers. If you are wearing cotton, cotton takes a long time to dry, so be careful of wearing that if you have that on your head, if you sweat a lot. And instead, use those synthetic fabrics to wick moisture away from your skin that dry quickly.
So I want to break the ice by talking about ice safety. Now, we've had very cold weather followed by more mild winter weather this week here in Milwaukee. But should I assume that whatever ice was strong enough to hold me in January is probably still strong enough to hold me now?
I would be careful on assuming that because ice conditions can change rapidly based on the temperature. And as you might have heard before, no ice is 100% safe. So there are places you can check, like your bait shops that might be nearby or any local resorts that can tell you about those ice conditions. Generally, if you're walking on ice, you want it at least 4 inches thick. And if you see cracks or slushy ice while you're walking out on, say, a lake or a pond, that's a sign that ice isn't stable and you could potentially fall in.
Gotcha. Okay. Watch for cracks and slushy ice. Avoid those. Okay. So we've covered ice and ponds. Do you have any tips for avoiding a slip and fall on sidewalk ice?
Yeah, for sidewalks, you want to walk like a penguin. So you kind of have your feet out a little bit wider than your normal stance. Walk a little bit more slowly and make sure you're not doing rapid movements because then you'll fall and you can cause injuries. Also, maybe hold your hands out to help hold balance if you're afraid that your balance isn't there when you're walking on the ice and that can keep you from falling down.
Now, we haven't gotten a ton of snow this winter in southeast Wisconsin, but does that mean that we're in the clear for avoiding blizzards entirely this year?
Weather can change rapidly, so I cannot 100% tell you that there won't be a blizzard. That would be something that a meteorologist can fill you in on, and that's important why you have to pay attention to the forecast because weather does change quickly. And having that forecast information can let you know if a blizzard is coming or a winter storm or those extreme cold temperatures.
So in the event that we get a lot of snow at one time, how can I get help or help someone if they are snowed into their home?
The biggest way to help is not to put yourself in danger. If you suspect someone might be in danger or being stuck in the snow, call 911. They will be able to provide assistance that way. If you are stuck in the snow, it's important to stay in your vehicle if you are stranded in your vehicle, because there's other vehicles that are using the road. They might not see you and they might accidentally hit you. And so it's very important to stay in your vehicle if you are snowed in.
Now, you handle emergencies from all over the state of Wisconsin, but is there anything in particular that people in southeast Wisconsin should be aware about?
So an important thing to note for any emergency is to always take steps to be prepared. That's making a plan and know where your safe spots are in different weather conditions, who are your emergency contacts so that you could get a hold of them, and also where are you going to go, like what is your location going to be if you have to pack up and leave in case your home isn't safe anymore. Those are some important things to think about with the planning process. It's also important to make sure that you have an emergency kit that has the supplies you would need in order to possibly survive 3 days. And it's also very important to have ways to receive weather alerts, whether that's through your phone, through an NOAA weather radio, or even TV. It's very important to get those alerts so you know what's going on and local authorities are able to direct you in what to do when those situations occur.
So, Katie, if you can leave us with one thing to remember about winter emergencies, what would it be?
Yeah, I think the major thing is that winter has a variety of hazards, whether that's snowstorms, the freezing rain, or extreme cold, and to pay attention to the weather forecast so you can plan and prepare before those weather events happen.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for joining me on Lake Effect. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, Sam.
That was Katie Rusnellos, Public Information Officer with Wisconsin Emergency Management. She spoke with Lake Effect's Sam Woods. In the winter, many of us find ourselves spending more time in our homes. But that's not always an option, especially for people who need to be outside for long periods of time, like farm workers, delivery people, or EMTs. This is familiar territory for Eric Larson, a Wisconsin native and polar adventurer. Through his work, he's learned how to survive in extremely cold environments, and as an expedition guide, he helps others do the same. He joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers with his tips on how to stay safe and warm in the frigid cold.
What are some of the top things to keep in mind when you're preparing to be in the cold for an extended period of time?
I think, surprisingly, one of the most important things that I focus on, quite honestly, is not getting too hot. You really don't want to sweat and overheat, because as soon as you start cooling off, your body loses its ability to insulate itself. Aside from that, I always tell people, or I always ask people what their goals are. Depending on how you're outside really informs what you do and how you dress. For example, if you're sitting in a deer stand and not moving, that's quite different and a quite different approach to layering and wearing cold weather gear than, say, running or Nordic skiing.
So let's go through a couple of those. If you are someone who might be going outside and they are mostly sitting, maybe they are a police officer and they're standing in a specific spot, or they're hunting, and as you mentioned, they're in a deer stand, what are the ways that you want to dress if you are doing something that is relatively inactive?
Quite honestly, as much as I said there was a distinction, it's still all relatively the same. And you know, you do want to dress in layers. I like to have a light wicking layer next to my skin. So basically you have a wicking layer and then an insulation layer, something that holds in the heat, and then a shell layer, something that protects you from the wind. And the less likely that you are to move, or the colder it is, the more insulating layers that you really will need to wear. You know, apart from that, if you are sitting around more, I tend to wear thicker layers as well. And you have to be mindful of kind of the different types of heat loss that there are. For example, sitting or standing, you have a lot of conductive heat loss, which is just contact with the ground or an object. And so, for example, your feet, putting extra insoles in your boots can really help keep your feet warmer, because you're not losing as much of that heat through the bottom of your soles.
Now, you mentioned the different layers that you put on your body. Can you explain what each of those is and the purpose of each of them?
Yeah, well, the first layer next to your skin is a base layer, and that's usually a thin, breathable layer that one both traps heat next to your body, but that also wicks moisture away from your skin. The way that your body insulates and clothes help insulate is that there's a layer of air next to your skin in between that base layer, and that helps keep you warm. When you sweat, that layer of air is replaced by water and moisture, and you're not able to stay as warm as long. And so having that base layer, that tight layer next to your skin, pulls that moisture out from your body and helps keep that warm insulating layer next to your body. And then the next layer would be an insulating layer, and that can be anything from just a thicker base layer, like a fleece layer or a wool layer, upwards of a down jacket or down pants even. And so that's just a thicker layer that's able to trap more heat in next to your body. Then after that, a shell layer is just something that you can wear that's going to protect from the wind, because I talked a little bit about conductive heat loss, but convective heat loss is also very important to factor in. And just air moving across your body, you can lose a lot of heat that way. And so reducing the amount of air that comes into contact of your layers or your body is going to have an impact on your ability to stay warm.
Now, you mentioned one of the things you want to avoid is getting too warm and sweating. If you are outside and you notice that you've started to get a little hot, how do you handle that as somebody who is often pretty active when they're in the cold?
Yeah, I have this philosophy that I call thoughtfulness. So I'm always kind of checking in with my body and the environment and seeing where I'm at. I like to be the perfect temperature all the time. And so what I'm doing is, as I'm moving along, if I start warming up, I can feel before I'm sweating, I will do things like put my hood down or unzip my jacket. A lot of my gear is very specifically designed for the things I do. And so I have long zippers, pit zippers, and side zips on my pants that I can open up and ventilate and let heat out and really regulate that way. But I've been so warm, like for example, I've been in Antarctica and just been skiing in a t-shirt because I've been so warm and there's no wind and I don't want to sweat. I'm in a pretty extreme situation, so I have to be hyper vigilant about it, because if I am in a situation where I'm just generating so much sweat and moisture, and then a worse situation occurs, like in the Arctic Ocean, like I fall into a lead or a piece of equipment breaks, my margins are so small that I have to be really focused on that perfect temperature. You know, for the average person, you know, going out for a couple hours, it's if you sweat a little bit, it's not the end of the world. But I try to minimize those peaks and those troughs, and kind of ventilating or taking a layer off is really important. And as a side note, I talk to people a lot in group situations where they're out. Oftentimes, people don't want to stop and take a layer off because they don't want to impede the group. But I always encourage people to be selfish about what they need to do to take care of themselves first, because then they'll be safer for the group and ultimately more efficient overall.
Now, my husband is actually a UPS driver, so he spends quite a bit of time outside. And one of the things that he does for himself before he goes out to work is he does a lot of stretching. He does a lot of, just trying to test his flexibility a bit just because of the kind of movement he's doing throughout the day. Are there ways that you can prepare your body, not just for maybe the activity that you're doing, but also for just being in the cold?
I mean, I think there's all sorts of different things that you can do. For me personally, it's more about my mind than my body. It's just understanding that I have the ability to be in that condition no matter what. I think your mind can be your worst enemy. They're so closely connected when you're outside. And so if you think you're going to be cold and miserable, most likely you're going to be cold and miserable. Obviously, when you are cold, your muscles can get more tense. It is easier to potentially, pull a muscle or strain something or whatever. So really, a lot of my preparation just is involved in not getting cold. And so I oftentimes will be wearing some additional layers when I'm just starting out, and I'll stop and take off my big down jacket and put in my sled or my pack so that I'm not starting cold. You know, a lot of people who are kind of more active and maybe just doing like a short half an hour run or an hour run or whatever it is, they're more likely to start cold, so to speak. And that's a pretty common practice for me. I'm outside, you know, 10, 12 hours a day at 30, 40 degrees below zero. And so I just, again, have to be a little more mindful of those things. But there are a lot of different practices. And again, I also encourage people to find their own solutions. Everybody's body is a little different, obviously, and their goals are different, and how they recreate or are outside are different. And so just finding something that works, but understanding that you can be outside and be warm no matter what the activity or what you're doing.
As someone who spends a lot of time outside, do you have any tips and tricks that might not be common knowledge that can help people when they find themselves in this situation?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many little things I do. I call myself the weakest link in every situation that I'm in. So I'm constantly trying to find systems and structures to buttress myself. You know, I do a lot with food to be able to keep my food from not freezing solid so that I can eat it. And that's important on a couple levels. You know, one of the things that keeps you warm is eating. And so to be able to have access to food that you can actually eat that's palatable is really important. I like to store things in pockets close to my body. I do have a hot water bottle that's got a sleeve, and I'll put an energy bar in the lid of that, and that keeps it soft so that I can eat it. But eating regularly is really important as well. I travel in a pretty strict schedule so that I always will take these breaks to eat and drink. Hydration is a really important part of staying warm as well. Your blood circulating is what moves heat around your body. And so being hydrated is important. Conversely, when you drink more, you also have to go to the bathroom more. And going to the bathroom is also important because then your body isn't heating all that extra fluid up inside. But I think my main really focus is more of the practice, and I kind of mentioned it earlier, but that idea of thoughtfulness, checking in with yourself and the environment, and making changes not in a crazy frenetic way, but in a thoughtful, deliberate way, and knowing that you're going to be able to be out no matter what the conditions are.
Nice. Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you. Always fun.
Eric Larson is a polar adventurer, expedition guide, and Cedarburg native. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers. Did you know you can listen to Lake Effect as a podcast? Just search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to download and listen on demand. In about 10 minutes, we'll tell you what to keep in your car for winter safety and how to care for your vehicle in cold temperatures. But first, we'll share some tips on how to care for your pets during the winter months. That's coming up on Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Many pet owners may wonder in the winter how best to keep their pets safe and comfortable. To learn some health and safety tips for our furry friends, Lake Effect's expert Nunez is joined by Angela Speed, the Vice President of Communications for the Wisconsin Humane Society. Excret starts by showing Speed a picture of her dog, Benny.
I have a 3-year-old pug named Benny. Oh, look at those wrinkles.
He's adorable.
And it's his second winter in Wisconsin. You know, although it's been pretty mild, I want to be prepared for anything, especially for this cutie. So the first question that comes to my mind is, how cold is too cold to take dogs outside for a walk?
I wish that I could give you a temperature. However, just like people,
pet's cold tolerance varies, and that can depend on their age, their coat, their body fat, activity level, what they've been conditioned to. A dog moving from a southern climate may not be as acclimated, even if they are a husky, than a dog who has spent every winter here in Wisconsin. So pet owners know their pets best, but ultimately, you should err on staying inside more than letting them stay outside for long periods of time. And when we have temperatures that are bitter cold, like 0 degrees, or schools are closing, wind chills are terrible. At the Wisconsin Humane Society, we only allow the dogs to go outside, have a quick potty break, and come right back in. It's just not worth the risks of hypothermia or frostbite, and the cold can be very dangerous. We do see frostbite every single year. Our veterinary team does. So it is definitely a real risk.
Yeah, I just kind of want to elaborate on that. Like, what does frostbite or hypothermia look like in a pet, like a dog or cat?
Yeah, so frostbite, typically pets are most susceptible to frostbite in their ears, their paw pads, and the tips of their tail. And at first, the tissue might appear discolored, very light gray or pink. It might be sore to the touch or swollen, but you may not see it really set in for a couple days where the tissue can die and actually become almost black and slough off. In hypothermia, you tend to see dogs who are shivering, shaking, really cold, lethargic, and you want to get them inside right away and slowly warm them up.
That makes sense. What are some other ways to keep your pets safe when it is bitterly cold outside and you have to walk them or let them out and do their business?
So if your dog will tolerate them, a lot of people have great success with booties or socks to really protect those sensitive paw pads and protect them also from like ice or cracking as well. Some dogs do really well in jackets or sweaters, and that's a lot of fun too. Lots of themed outfits for your dogs. And also there's different types of salve that you can apply to those paw pads if they get dry or cracked. And also if you are taking your dog outside for a short walk, you want to always make sure to wipe off their paws when they come back inside. Antifreeze is something that can frequently become ingested if they get into it in a garage or on the street, and it's really sweet smelling. It tastes good to them, and it's highly toxic. Dogs will also pick up salt from sidewalk salt, and that can cause all sorts of gastrointestinal issues if they ingest that as well. So you want to wipe off those paws right away. Another tip that we have provided to people and is really popular is for little dogs. So if your little dog does not like to go on the snow or the ice to do their business, we recommend getting a bale of straw and putting that straw out in your backyard. And just that texture difference and it not being so ice cold will help them go potty really quick and come back in.
Whoa, that's really smart. Okay, I might try that with Benny. So you mentioned some booties or coats. How should someone know if they need to buy their pet any winter gear like that?
What we'll often see is if you're taking your dog for a walk, they'll start to do that little paw dance. And that's because their paws are getting really cold. If you feel the pavement with the palm of your hand, you can see why their paws are getting so cold so quickly. In that case, you might want to try to slowly introduce boots, especially if they're still enjoying their time outside and it's just affecting their paws. Dogs who have really short coats, whether that's a Chihuahua or a Lab or a Boxer, a Pitty Mix, with that short coat, they might really benefit from having a jacket or some apparel on them. Fleece is a really great material for dogs, too. So those are probably the two most common products that you can get, boots and jackets for your dog for those walks in the winter.
So what about if there's like an emergency? What should people include in their emergency kits for their pets?
Oh, I'm so glad that you brought this up because we are constantly reminded of the need for emergency planning for pets, whether that's natural disasters or wildfires or power outages. It's really important that you keep a kit for both your dogs and your cats. And some of the most important things to have in that emergency kit are, of course, their medications, their ID, some basic food, a leash, a carrier, some of those basic supplies that you don't want to be running all over the house gathering in the event of an emergency. And it's really important to keep those ID tags up to date, that they're wearing them at all times with collars.
so that in an event where you were separated, we could make a reunion happen as fast as possible.
So we've talked a lot about dogs, but do you have any safety tips for cat owners?
Absolutely. So really, first of all, cats should be kept indoors all the time. We know from research that indoor cats typically live 16 to 18 years compared to the average life of an outdoor cat only being about 3 to 4 years. So really, cats are safest inside. That being said, we know some cats get out, and we also know that there are cats just living in our community. And we do see injuries quite frequently from cats climbing inside cars in cold weather climates. So on those super cold days, if you're going out to your car before work in the morning, if you just make some noise, you know, honk your horn, just beat on the hood of the car a couple times, just in case there are cats or kittens hiding in your car because it's a warm place, or a, you know, squirrel, raccoon, other creatures that are seeking warmth may climb into the hood. So fan belt injuries are actually what we see from cats or other critters climbing into cars.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even have thought about that. Well, Angela, thank you so much for sharing these cold weather safety tips with me. I feel better prepared this winter.
And I love that you have your jackets for your dog already.
Thank you.
Snow Queen of Texas left Paris in a cloud of smoke.
Angela Speed is the Vice President of Marketing and Communications for the Wisconsin Humane Society. She spoke with Lake Effect's Axgrid Nunez.
In a cool green farmhouse, if you go to Houston, be quiet as a mouse.
Before going outside, we typically take extra precautions to face the cold. But should we do the same for our cars? The cold, combined with any additional snow and salt, can not only make it challenging to drive in, but also a challenge to keep our cars ready to cope throughout the season. To share some tips on winter car care to help keep our vehicles running smoothly, I'm joined by our auto contributor.
Mark Savage, welcome back to Lake Effect. Great to have you in the studio.
Yeah, it's nice to be back in the studio.
It's been a while. So it is winter, and while Wisconsin, of course, likes to keep us on our toes with how many degrees fluctuates, we're here to talk about how to best take care of our cars and to not put extra stress on them in the colder season. So we'll start with some super basic things first. Do we need snow tires?
I would say in our climate, probably not. If we were up in the UP, maybe that would be a good thing to have. I mean, you know, we have not had tons of snow in recent years. I mean, you know, if we get a 2 or 3 inch snowfall, what's that last a day or two, or the streets are clear within 2 or 3 hours? Snow tires not that important, but I would say this. If you are maybe a younger driver that has not driven a lot in snow, or you know your own skill level and think, I'm not a great driver, it's not a bad thing to have. You know, you're going to want to put them on, I would say here, probably in December, and take them off by March or so, just because the temperature gets warmer. You know, snow tires are great for giving you some extra traction and better steering ability and better stopping ability. And I would say generally we don't need them unless you're going to go up further north and be there most of the winter.
Yeah, good to know. So speaking of tires, the change in temperature also changes the PSI, you know, especially if you're someone like me who likes to have my PSI read right up on my screen at all times just to keep track of it. You know, you notice there's a slight fluctuation anywhere from 3 to 5 PSI depending on what the weather is doing. So can you explain why we see this difference and when is the right time to either let some of that pressure out or add more?
Yeah, I think everybody has had that light flash on their dash that says tire. And that's probably after 1 or 2 pounds of pressure change in any tire on your car. And the reason for that, of course, is the cold weather. Things contract, right? Well, air is contracting too, and that relieves some of the pressure, so you have lower pressure in your tire. So it's a simple, you know, scientific thing. If it's 1 or 2 pounds, it's not probably that big a deal. But what you want to do is, of course, check it with your tire gauge to make sure that even though it says it's down 1, maybe it's down 5. And then it becomes a problem because the softer your tire becomes, then it, you know, it has different traction than if well, it's better than overfilling. But nonetheless, It's important to know. It's mainly check it whenever you see that light come on. And obviously, if it's a 24 below zero day and you look at the tire and it looks pretty good, you think, well, yeah, okay, I'm going to wait till tomorrow when it's 20 degrees.
Right, it might change.
And then I'll check it and then top it off a little bit, fill it up. I would say if it goes up to 45, 50 degrees, you might want to let a little pressure out. And again, but most tires, you're between 30 and 35 pounds, you're good. And most of them are around 32, so...
Yeah.
You can just keep up with it. And, you know, it's not practical for us to check that every single day.
Exactly.
Unless maybe you got a heated garage.
Yes. Well, and speaking of heated garages, or if someone doesn't have the luxury of parking in a garage, maybe they have a slab or anything else, should we warm up our car before driving?
Well, I think the old wives' tale was like warm your car up for 15, 20 minutes and let it sit there. Everything that I've read over the last several years is because we have fuel injection and because we have computers controlling all of our cars now, once you start the engine, about 30 seconds, it has totally got all the oil where it needs to go. All the fluids are moving. So it's basically you get in, you put on your seatbelt, turn up the heat, whatever you want to do to adjust before you pull out of the driveway. That's fine.
Well, and ideally, our commutes are pretty reasonable, and hopefully a lot of people are near things should they need help. But in general, what are some good supplies or tools to always have in our car in the winter?
And this is my advice, but it's not necessarily what I do. So,
you're in different cars testing them out all the time.
I am in different cars testing them out, so I don't take a little kit with me everywhere. But I would say an important thing here is to make sure you have some gloves, because you never know when you're going to need some gloves. I think a flashlight, something that you can look and see and identify what a problem is. Have something like a tire gauge so you know you can check your tire if it's looking a little low to you. Make sure you have a jack in the car, because some cars don't have everything in them anymore, especially if you buy a used car. It might not be in there. A lot of the new cars don't have a spare tire. You know what they say is things like have a ratchet set, pliers, things like that. One of the smartest things I've heard recently is have some zip ties in your car, because you never know when something's going to come loose, that if you have a zip tie and you can get it tightened back up, even if it's a loose cable, something under the car, even a tailpipe for that matter, something so it's not dragging, at least get you to the next gas station or mechanic shop, something like that. So those are all good things to have. I don't know. I think probably having your cell phone with you is the most important thing to have at this point.
Yeah. Well, and you will know more about this. So I don't know if it's as necessary with newer cars that have better gauges, better balance, but do we need to have cat litter or sandbags in our cars in the back to help us drive in winter, or to have on hand if we slide off a road and need some traction?
I mean, there's nothing wrong with having that. I probably wouldn't bother with that unless I would. If you're in a rural area and you think maybe I'm going to slide off a road someplace and there's not anybody around for the next 20 minutes or something, yeah, it might not be a bad thing to have. But then again, we also realize that probably, you know, maybe up to over half of the cars and trucks that we have now have four-wheel drive, and that at least gives you the ability to more likely get out of a snowdrift or something like that, as long as you haven't dropped off into some really big hole somewhere.
Right. And speaking of four-wheel, it's not a hall pass, right? It's not a solution. We still need to drive carefully, even if you have four-wheel.
Yeah. And here's the way I think of it is that on four-wheel drive, it gives you more traction, and it's better in snow or something where you have something to get traction on. But if you're driving down the highway and you hit black ice, four-wheel drive really doesn't. It might help you for one instant of a second on something, but most of the time you're skating across the top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful. Use your brain along with and your foot to drive a little more responsibly.
Now moving on to like the overall maintenance aspect of car care, maybe something we check before the winter. You know, how often should we be replacing our battery, or at least checking on it before wintertime? Is there more of a chance of the battery not working in the frigid weather, or is it just a matter of the age of the battery?
I think the age of the battery more. Cold does have an effect on the battery, and ironic that you should mention this, because I just had the battery replaced in our car. You know, it was a 3-year battery. It was almost up to 3 years, but it was starting to lose its power to crank, so we replaced it. That's good. But know how old your battery is and look under the hood every once in a while. You can always, you know, clean the corrosion off around the posts if you want to. That will help it some. but mostly know how old your battery is and realize that it's really more prone to fail in the warm weather, because once it gets really hot out, and especially under the hood of a car, and it gets trapped under there, and the heat gets, you know, it gets trapped under there, that's much more likely to cause a problem with your battery, more of a sudden death. It's more the cranking power in the winter when it gets cold. And obviously, if it doesn't crank enough, you're not going to fire up the car.
Good to know. Now, with winter comes lots of salt, course. How often should we be making sure that our cars are clean? Or, you know, is the underbelly wash really a thing we need, even though I think it's something that the car wash stations are trying to have us do.
Well, it certainly seems like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But my sponsor of the car, Jiffy Wash, says to, no. everything that I've read, it says maybe every 10 days if there's a lot of snow and ice and salt. We've had a fair amount of salt this winter because we've had a little more ice on the roads and a little less snow. And it is important to do those underbody flushes because that's the part of your car that's going to suffer with the ice and the salt, because that affects your chassis, your suspension, your exhaust system. That's what it's going to eat into, because those are the metal parts. Think about how much aluminum and then composite materials are in the bodies of the cars now. You don't see, except for older cars, a lot of rust on cars. So it may look horrible on your car, and it might, you know, work on the paint job a little bit over time if you leave it on there like for the whole winter. But if you're going to wash the car every 10 days, 2 weeks, something like that, that helps the body easily. But get the underbody flush, pay the extra $350 or $10 or whatever it is these days, and help preserve the underside of your car, because that's the functional part of the car.
All right. So, yeah, I will take the time to do at least one underbody flush this winter.
There you go.
You've inspired me to do it. So, Mark, thank you so much for coming in and sharing some tips.
No problem. Thanks.
Come to me again in the cold, cold night.
Mark Savage writes the auto review column, Savage on Wheels, for WUWM and SavageOnWheels.com. You can find more information and all of his current car reviews at WUWM.com. A new season of Bubbler Talk is on the way, and we need some new questions. Submit your questions about the Milwaukee area at WUWM.com. Staying safe in the winter doesn't mean just staying inside. It's good for your mental health to get out and enjoy the fun that winter has to offer. We'll tell you about an opportunity to do that in Milwaukee next on Lake Effect on WUWM. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. For the second year in a row, Winter Break Milwaukee is inviting people to come out of hibernation and find ways to enjoy the deep winter. To learn more about the free festival, Lake Effect's Excret Nunez spoke with Kate Pochask, the founder of Winter Break Milwaukee. Pochask starts by explaining what the festival is all about.
This event is a free weekend winter festival, and it's meant to draw residents out of hibernation and into the outdoors. So it's a free recreation for all, and it's meant to give people a chance to be in community in a season where there's not as much going on, and maybe you need a little bit more inducement to put on real pants and leave the house.
So this seems like a very fitting event for a city that's known for its festivals. But I'm wondering, like, why did you personally decide to start this event?
Actually, I think maybe it was, well, sort of two parts. So one is I adopted a dog, and she's a beautiful mutt. She's very floofy, and we didn't know what she was. And then we had her DNA tested, and we learned she was a part Siberian husky. So she was very good at being outside, so I had to really quickly learn how to be good at being outside so that I could, you know, give her the exercise that she needed. But prior to that, I was not a winter person at all.
Really?
No, not at all. Like, love the summer. I mean, probably like a lot of Milwaukeeans, And then I think maybe the other factor was I was traveling and I met up with some family that lives in Sweden, and they were asking about, like, how do we deal with the winters? And I noticed that, like, their outlook was just completely different than ours. There's, like, this concept in Sweden, it's called friluftsliv leave, and it's about open air living. So, like, they actually have, like, kindergarten outside, and if it's raining, the kids wear raincoats and they still go outside. And I think there's a proverb that's like, there's no bad weather, there's only bad clothes. And I realized that just, like, their entire foundational attitude toward winter was just very different, and it made them a lot happier, I think. But I just thought, like, oh, there's other places that are doing winter well, and Milwaukee is sort of lagging behind. I think it's maybe happening because, you know, our winters are getting milder and milder, but we're getting worse and worse at being outside in that cold.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I'm not from Milwaukee or Wisconsin. I'm from Arizona. And so it's been an interesting time for me to, like, develop this new relationship with winter that I didn't really have before. And so I feel like this festival really introduces people to seeing and experiencing winter differently, especially as a way to maybe maintain their mental health or get outside during the winter.
Yeah, I'm really interested in the idea of how to insert joy into winter. So I'm 40 now, but I learned to ski at age 36 or 37. And so that's kind of fun. But I also think that, like, it feels out of reach and it feels kind of culturally gatekept. And I don't love that about it. I would love to see more people interacting with it. Like, for example, there is a group called Ebony Ice that takes kids from BIPOC neighborhoods and takes them to ski hills and teaches them all, like, the foundational stuff. And I think that that's really amazing. They're going to be at the February 15th event having a table. So I think equity is just something that I'm interested in for this event. And then I honestly, like, I think it's like going for walks is really the most fun for me, because you get to see how the landscape changes, and, you know, the leaves aren't on the trees, so you can see all the squirrel apartments up there. And sometimes if it's snowy and you get footprint evidence and you're like, oh, there actually are little things walking around here. So sometimes it's, like, easy to think that, like, everything's dead in the winter, everything's hibernating, or, you know, but it's really just sort of like we aren't outside as much. And so we're not seeing the things that are going on. And yeah, that's the kind of joy that I want to help bring to other people. Like, I want other people to be out and seeing that stuff too.
Absolutely. And so what's new about winter break this year? Walk me through the activities.
Yeah. Okay. So the big thing is that we have two different locations and two dates. So this is meant to increase access for more Milwaukeeans. So we have one going on at Bradford Beach, February 8th. So that's 12 to 4, and we will be having winter surfing going on. There is dog sledding going to be happening on the beach this year. So we are going to try to either do demos, so, like, actually running carts or sleds or things like that. It depends on the weather. So we'll see what they'll be able to do. I'm really crossing my fingers for some snow, because if they are using their sleds, we're going to be able to give out rides. Dog sled rides. So that'll be cool. So there'll be a musher standing behind, and then guests will be able to ride in what we call, like, the basket of the sled. So that's super fun. We have Tootsie's Teas coming. She's going to be doing a class on winter woes and how some tea ingredients can be used to sort of help you avoid some of, like, the common winter ailments. So, like, if you've got a sore throat starting, you might want to drink this tea. So she'll be conducting a class, and she'll be there selling. Fat Tire Biking. So we did that last year as well, but, like, on the Oak Leaf Bike Trail that runs right along Bradford, there'll be the opportunity to go biking and then also Nordic walking again. So Milwaukee Rec will be joining us to lead those activities. They've been an amazing partner. The people there are just so friendly and so ready to teach anybody who, you know, if you're feeling intimidated by it, they're awesome at overcoming that.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, this sounds so exciting.
Yes, it's all free. You might want to bring some cash along in case you want to buy extra goodies here and there, like Tootsie's Teas, or, you know, maybe buy, we'll have some food on site, like some food trucks. But everything that you're going to do at the event is open to everybody. And the lakefront event is going on at Bradford Beach, Saturday, February 8th from 12 to 4 p.m. And the event that happens the weekend right after that will be happening at Havenwood State Forest. So that's Saturday, February 15th from 12 to 4 p.m.
Nice. Well, Kate, thank you so much for joining me and speaking with me about the importance of getting outside in the winter. I'm excited.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure meeting you.
When will I know that I really can go to
to the well once more, time to decide on. Kate Pochask is the founder and organizer of Winter Break Milwaukee. She joined Lake Effect's Ex-Grit Nunez. Winter Break Milwaukee will feature a variety of winter activities on two separate Saturdays this month in two different Milwaukee parks. The first event is happening this Saturday, February 8th, from noon to 4 at Bradford Beach. And that's Lake Effect for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Joy Powers, Sam Woods, and Ex-Grit Nunez join me in producing Lake Effect each week with help from Rob Larry and Graham Thomas. Becky Mortensen is our executive producer. Emily Files helps edit the show. We also heard from Jimmy Gutierrez, Taryn Powell, and Mayan Silver from the WUWM News team this week. Jason Reavy is our studio engineer. Michelle Maternowski is our digital manager. Valeria Navarro-Villegas is our digital editor. Trapper Shep wrote our theme music. If you've missed any of Lake Effect this week, you can find all of our conversations at WUWM.com. If you'd like to take the show on the go, simply download the Lake Effect podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Join us again on Monday at noon for a look at Valiant Vell, a book on the life and experiences that shaped pioneering politician Vell Phillips. Plus, our Books and Beyond series visits the Cargill Community Kitchen at the Mitchell Street Library and also learns about MPL's historic recipe file. Thank you so much for joining us today, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. When to descend to a man for a friend, all the channels that have broken down. Now you bring it up, I'm gonna ring it up just to hear you sing it out. Step from the road to the sea to the sky, and if you believe